Welcome to the final Tribune Tower After Hours. I am sentimental to a point, but the new studios are very nice. And this is a, I don't know, just worked out that my guest, first guest, is one of my favorite people on the planet. Libby York. Hi, Libby.
Hi.
Are you sad? Are you sad being here?
Well, just knowing
you'll get over
moving
it.
Is kind of historic.
It is. You're part of history. You're part of living history. Libby will be performing Tuesday night at the fabulous Winners Jazz Club, which is, you know, a stone's throw from here, doing a new show. A new show, at least for Chicago, Three for the Road, Traveling Light. This is a manifestation of your own love of travel. And all of a sudden you realize, wow, there are a lot of songs about good places, aren't there?
There are. It's funny, when I've had so much fun putting the sets together and the songs, it's one of the things I love about this music. You've never run out of great songs that you've never done yet. So I have everything from Rodgers and Hart, Mountain Greenery, to Corcovado, Antonio Carlos Jobim.
It's an international kind of flavor here,
yes,
too.
Absolutely. Paris Blues is in there, and Rhode Island is famous for you. It's a Dietz and Schwartz song.
You're not doing
it. You know that one?
Yeah, I do.
I am doing it.
The only reason I know it is because I used to hang around with Buddy Charles so much, and Buddy was the living encyclopedia of every single song in the world. You'll be performing with the great Jeremy Kahn on piano and Russ Phillips on trombone, also doing some vocal duets with
you. Yeah. When I was thinking of who do I want, I always want Jeremy with me. And then I've known Russ for a long time, but we'd never really worked together. And he sings, so we can do a couple of vocal duets.
One of the interesting things, just off something you just said about who you wanted with you, you have always been, and one of the reasons I adore you personally and professionally, is that you have always considered yourself not the star, but a part of a band. You are one of the most collaborative performers, certainly one of the most collaborative vocalists I've ever known. How did that come to be, Libby? Was it, you would think it was born of some kind of, you know, horrible insecurity, but it probably isn't that, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, my approach to jazz, you know, it's not nostalgia. It's in the moment. And I'm not a scat singer, but I love to improvise with the phrasing. And so, I think someone early on said, well, you're about as good as the people that you work with. And that made an impression on me.
No, it really, really did. I mean, you are collaborative. Let's go back now. You were born and raised in Rogers Park, and your family's from your parents were sort of from the North Shore a bit. And then you went to school on the South Side. How did that, tell me about the young Libby York way before you came to music.
Oh, boy.
I mean, music was part, your parents were not professional musicians, but the music was a huge part of your young life.
Yeah, they both went to Northwestern, played piano and sang, and so I always grew up hearing Sinatra and Perry Como and Rosie Clooney in the house. So that's, you know, a lot of these lyrics are just in my brain. I just heard them from a very early age.
But you decided, you never studied, you studied political science at, you also went to the same school. I'm looking at the
American University.
You went to Sullivan High School, which was my mother's high school, too.
Oh, great.
And then you went to American University and studied political science with the notion of doing what?
Well, you know, that was the question. You know, when I graduated, I thought, now what do I do for a living as a political science major? And I worked on a few campaigns and, you know, still interested in politics, but it didn't do it for me. So.
But you didn't immediately go to music either.
No, I taught in D.C. for a while, and then I started a restaurant.
This is the fact, ladies and gentlemen. Here comes the very, very, very interesting chapter of Libby York's life before she became a noted jazz vocalist.
You know, I think do you remember a restaurant in Evanston, Fanny's?
Oh, sure. Fanny's was famous.
And there was a woman, Fanny, right?
They used to freeze their spaghetti sauce.
Yes. And she was fabulous. And I remember she came to our table, and I remember thinking, oh, this is kind of like showbiz. And I think in my mind, I don't know, things came together so that we started this restaurant, which is now in its 44th year.
The restaurant
I don't own it anymore.
The restaurant is not here.
It's in
all places.
Beach.
Yeah, Delaware.
Which is the summer resort for D.C. So
What was that like? I mean, now, now half the people I know think, oh, I think I want to own a restaurant so I can be on TV or something. It was literally inspired by Fanny, whose name I do not remember from Fanny's restaurant.
Yeah.
I believe it's Lazar,
L-A-Z-A-R. Partly that, and partly we were doing our little hippie farm-to-table thing at about the same time that Alice Waters was starting Chez Panisse in Berkeley.
Were you the chef?
I was the salad person and the front of the house managed the employees person. And there were three partners, and one of our partners was the main chef, and the other partner was my then husband, who was like the business guy. So we had a good division of labor.
Was it? I mean, obviously, it's 45 years old. It obviously was successful right off the bat. Is it kind of famous? It must be famous in that area.
It's famous. In fact, we were named, what was it, some of the 50 most influential Delawareans of the past 50 years.
Are you kidding?
For, you know, starting this kind of foodie revolution in Rehoboth Beach. And now there's tons of great restaurants there. And when we started, there was only fries and burgers on the boardwalk, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Was that fun for you or no?
It was great. I love the creative aspect of you create this whole world, you know?
Sure.
But then I did it 5 years, and by then I was already taking the bus to New York, you know, doing singing lessons. I had some gigs already, and
How did the bug get you? What happened there? I mean, the restaurant business is a labor-intensive business.
Yes,
there's no question. I don't want to get into what was going on in the relationship with your husband, too. The whole idea of a husband and wife running a restaurant, I can't see it working for
so
long.
So many possibilities there.
But you didn't escape to music. Your kind of passion for it was sparked again, right?
Well, I never had thought about it as a career, but the more I actually started working, I was asked to join a band, and I started working with a guitarist who lived in the village, and I had gigs before I really kind of knew what was going on. And then I thought, okay, this is it. You know, this is what I love to do.
I am talking with Libby York, who will be performing at Winter's Jazz Club this Tuesday night. Do me a favor, folks, and you'll find out about Winter's Jazz Club if you go to Libby, LibbyYork.com. That will enable you to get a full blast of Libby York, including a wonderful recent interview by Mike Jeffers and his terrific publication. Stay tuned. I am going to allow you, just because this is the last show from the Tower, to hear Libby York sing. So please stay tuned.
The boat ride we would take, that moonlight on the lake, the way we danced and hummed our favorite song. The things we did last summer, I'll remember all winter long. The midway and the fun, that Cupid doll you won, the bell you rang to prove that you were strong. The things we did last summer, I'll remember all winter long. The early morning hike, the rented tandem bike, the lunches that we packed. We never could explain that sudden summer rain, the looks we got when we got back. All the leaves began to fade like promises we made.
That is the amazing Libby York. Libby, you're such a great singer, and that it always amazes me in part that you are not totally self-taught, but you learned to sing. A great deal of your learning was in front of audiences.
Yeah.
And certainly you had some experience dealing with human beings when you ran a restaurant, but that's got to give you I don't know whether it gives you an edge or what. What did that do for you?
Gosh.
It certainly put a lot of pressure on you.
Plenty of times you just wish, you know, in the beginning, I mean, I guess it has pluses and minuses, because when I was coming up, there weren't many jazz programs in the colleges, you know. And a lot of people learned on the bandstand. But yeah, there were plenty of times you just wish the stage would open up and swallow you. Nobody would, you know, you feel like, okay, I messed up. But it's a great way to learn. You learn quickly, you know.
No kidding. How have you grown as a singer? I know this is an impossible and psychologically fraught question. But growth as a singer, it comes with age. It comes with experience. It comes with familiarity with various tunes. I'm pretty sure you have never sung the same song twice alike.
No, that's the goal anyway. In a jazz approach, you know, you don't ever do it the same way twice, which keeps it fresh and keeps it fun. I find instead of trying to add stuff now, I'm trying to take stuff out.
Interesting.
Like keep it as simple as possible. Be as present in the moment with the lyric and the music as you possibly can be. And try not to get nerved out about the audience watching you, you know.
Do you still get nerved out? That's a great phrase. I love that phrase. Do you still do that?
You know, I'm finally at a point where I kind of love the audience, and hopefully they'll love me back. But I remember for a long time, I wish the audience would kind of just disappear so I could play my music. And, you know, it was scary, you know. But I've come to understand, I mean, that's a vital part of what you do. And
you have played.
Wonderful part.
You have played all over the place. You have never, to my mind, played enough in Chicago. You'll be Tuesday night at Winter's Jazz Club. With a show called Three for the Road, Traveling Light with Jeremy Kahn on piano, Russell Phillips on trombone and vocals. Compare for me. Compare. You have a place in Key West. I don't know how much performing you do in that.
Quite a bit, actually, yeah.
What's that jazz scene like down there? I bet it's good.
You know, it's just a small little island. It's a 2x4 island that, yeah, there's a handful of really good players. And I love playing there. The audience is there. But I also like to keep my hand in New York and, you know, keep the city thing happening.
Talk to me for a second about the differences between clubs in not so much Key West, but New York and Chicago. Because I've seen the evolution and de-evolution of Chicago jazz clubs over the last 40 years, and it's been sort of painful.
Well, it's amazing that Scott at Winter's has created this new club. I mean, I told him you've accomplished the nearly impossible.
Agreed.
To open a jazz club. And seems like they're doing fine. I love working there. You know, good sound, good stage, good lights. It's quiet. It's a listening room.
When you've also got the ageless Joe Siegel still running the jazz showcase.
Well, that's great.
Which is one of the great miracles of our time.
That's right. It is a miracle. And I'll be back there in September on the 26th to celebrate my birthday. It's become something of a tradition to do a birthday bash at the showcase. So that'll be September 26th.
You seem to, and you're going to stay on for a little while longer, but you seem to still get you seem to get more joy than ever out of doing what you do, even given that it is a difficult, and sometimes, you know, the recording business is in the toilet, and fewer and fewer clubs are out there. But the joy is a more, I think, personal thing for you, isn't it?
Yeah, joy is a good word. I do find joy from it. I just love the music, and I love working with the great musicians. And I think it's true that I'm kind of digging it more than ever the older I get rather than the other way around. So,
what do you think that is? I'm not your psychiatrist or psychologist, but what do you think that is?
I think, especially since I didn't start singing till I was 35, it took me a while to really believe that this is who I am and this is what I do, you know. But if I'm finally kind of getting the message that, you know, this is what brings me joy. And so it's a beautiful thing to have something you feel that way about.
Yeah, to have, well, and it also you realize that you do have a gift, right? You do. You must realize.
I know I was given a voice.
Don't be so self-effacing.
No, I know
okay.
I was given a. It is a gift. You're given a voice, and then what you choose to do with it is, you know, important.
Well, when you give, there's a joy that returns. I'm talking to Libby York. We got to get some commercials, and we're going to get some news, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more specifically about the Three for the Road, Traveling Light Show Tuesday night. Two sets. with Jeremy Kahn on piano and Russ Phillips on trombone and vocal at Winners Jazz Club. But do me a favor, go to Libby York, LibbyYork.com, because that way you can buy her CDs, that old-fashioned, it's like saying 78s, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel like I'm
CD.
Saying 78s.
You can do a digital download there, too.
Yeah, you can do that, too, but buy the CDs, we'll be right back. Well, welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. Libby York is the stuff that matters as far as I'm concerned. She will be appearing Tuesday night, singing her heart out for two shows at Winters Jazz Club. If you have not been there, it's just a stone's throw from Tribune Tower that I will never be in after tonight. Isn't that great?
Who knew?
I need to know a better class of people than like millionaires who will buy condos in this building. She'll be performing with Jeremy Kahn on piano, Russ Phillips on trombone, and vocal duet. As we started the show, Libby, and go to LibbyYork.com for all sorts of information and CDs. You theme your shows, and this one is a theme that is very dear to your heart, traveling, the world. It's the world.
I know, and there's just so many great songs that kind of fit into this
Were there too many? It must have been hard. Yeah, but it was hard to call this down.
It was. I've got several that I've never done before. There's a great Dave Frischberg song called Do You Miss New York, which I love. Never done. It's been in my book for years. And, Gypsy in My Soul, you know?
No,
I am fancy free and love to wander, it's just the gypsy.
You're not
in
doing
my
Chicago,
soul.
That toddling town.
And I am doing Chicago.
Are you really?
Of course.
It's worth it for that, ladies
have
and gentlemen.
I have to do Chicago.
It's worth it for that. Libby has chosen for her, for you to hear as she leaves and goes back to her place in Chicago. She also has a place in Key West, and she will be at Tuesday night at Winners Jazz Club. It is always great to see you. I will see you in September again, and you can come to the new studio.
Yeah.
She has chosen from one of her albums this song as a kind of homage to the Tribune Tower. She says goodbye forever to the Tribune Tower unless we both get to know some millionaires. Thanks, Libby.
Thank you, Rick.
For the memory of a rainy afternoon, swingy Harlem tunes, motor trips and burning lips and burning toast and prunes. How lovely it was. Thanks for the memory of candlelight and wine, castles on the Rhine, the Parthenon and moments on the Hudson River line. How lovely it was. Many's the time that we feasted, and many's the time that we fasted. Oh well, it was swell while it lasted.
Welcome back. Bob Chirito is asking if he needs headphones. We don't need anything on this last show from the Tribune Tower. I'd like to say we're sitting here with no clothes on, but I'm not going to do that. Bob is a guy who I have admired for a long time. I would see he's one of the most prolific freelance writers in this town. And freelance writing, having done it for about 10 years of my lengthy career, is a tough way to go. Bob, you are from one of the things that distinguishes your work, not only is it good writing, but you have a real sense of story. I mean, you are curious, but you also find stories that are, you know, like 5 months before they're going to wind up in the Main Street Press. Where are you from? Well, I know you're from here, but where?
Yeah, originally I'm from Morrow's Park, and I've been in Chicago.
That's like Chicago.
Yeah. I've been in the Chicago area my whole life. Went to high school in the suburbs in Naperville. And lived in Norwood Park. And
then you went to Columbia College to study journalism. Can I ask you why?
Well, I was going to SIU in Carbondale, and I got a little tired of it down there, and then I learned about Columbia, and the thing that attracted me was that their teachers all were working professionals.
Most of them, yeah.
You know, I did 3 internships, interned in Oak Park at the Wednesday Journal, interned with Pam Zekman at Channel 2.
Yeah, I heard that.
And, you know, where was the other?
That's a learning experience.
Yeah, the other one was I was in D.C. and I got assigned to Robert Novak, the late conservative columnist. So
and crazy man.
Yeah.
And crazy man. But journalism, when you got in, you're a young guy. How old are you?
I'll be 44 Tuesday.
That's a young guy. When you look back and say, wow, I got into journalism when journalism really started going crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really did. So you do have to, as a freelancer, spread yourself around, mm-hmm. right? How do you keep tabs on the city, Bob?
I just
talk to people.
Yeah, I talk to this. I do what your parents told you not to do and talk to strangers constantly. And I try to get out, whether it's riding my bike around the city or just going to different events. That helps a lot.
Do you live in the city now?
I live in Jefferson Park. So
that's right the city. Yeah, this is in a Gale Street Inn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that area pretty well. Gift Theater, you go there.
Mm. I do.
Let's look back. When you do these good internships, and an internship with Pam Zekman would be worth $800,000 in graduate school, frankly. She's a great reporter and a nice person, too. That you must have at one point, what did you aspire to, Bob? Did you want to do magazine work? Did you want to work for papers?
Yeah, you know, I've always just pretty much wanted to be a daily general assignment reporter.
Yeah.
That's really my passion, and that's really never changed. You know, and I've written magazine pieces and all that, and that's great, but I just like the day-to-day.
Well, one of the things that you seem to do, you and I share, I mean, one of the great, studs is Studs Terkel's mm-hmm. Epitaph was Curiosity Did Not Kill This Cat, and I think you kind of feel the same way. I mean, you get curious about something, but also being a journalist enables you to further explore that curiosity, does it not? I mean, to get to meet under the guise mm-hmm. of interview
sure.
these people that you are interested in.
Yeah, and the people I'm interested in is a range of people, all backgrounds, and whether they're celebrity or not doesn't really matter. If they're doing something interesting to me, that's really all it is. So.
Who are some of your favorite interviews?
Oh, God. I talked about this the other day with Tony Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, you and I share among the many things we share, a curiosity for life in general and the ability to never really make money at writing.
Yeah.
We were guests on Tony Fitzpatrick's podcast that he does with his son, Max. I heard it was good.
Man. It was fun. But to get back to your question,
sure.
My favorite interview, I don't know. I get that asked a lot. It's usually, I always say it's going to be my next one. But, you know, there's obviously ones that stick out.
How was Stuart Dybeck?
Stuart
I love
great.
Stuart Dybeck.
Yeah,
Stuart Dybeck, arguably the greatest living short story writer.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I met him at his, where he lives in Evanston, and we just chatted for a couple hours. And you know, he was very generous. There was nothing off limits.
Yeah. It doesn't sometimes amaze you, as it does me sometimes, Bob Chirito, that people who you admire and I admire and often put on a kind of pedestal really wind up being like regular people.
Yeah, I think they've been around enough and they have that self-assurance. They don't need to validate themselves by, putting others down or feeling like they're above somebody. And those who do that are usually the flash in the pan kind of celebrities.
That's an interesting observation.
You know, that's what I've seen. You know.
So who else? I interrupted you by saying Stuart Dybeck.
Yeah, Stuart was great.
Because you have literally interviewed, dozens of people,
you know,
some in Chicago Magazine,
mm-hmm.
and we'll talk after the break about your own. Some people have referred to the Chicago Ambassador as a blog, and I don't do that. I think it's more like an online magazine.
Yeah.
What do you call it?
I call it an online magazine.
Good.
It is on the Blogger platform online, but that's the only thing.
I don't know anything.
Yeah,
about
to me,
that
a blog is some guy in his sweatpants.
Thank you. Exactly.
You know, ranting and not doing any reporting.
Yeah. You know? No. It's just, it's someone's opinion.
Yeah,
for God's sake. So you were saying though,
Tom Palazzo. He was a great one. He's a character. Azra Nomani. She's a.
Who is that?
She's a Muslim woman who's a author. She was a former reporter, and I wanted to interview her for a long time, and I couldn't find an angle. I wanted a Chicago angle. Then she came to speak at the Humanities Fest a year or two ago,
And
I finally found the angle, so that was really a fun one. And she's
what do you do for you? You also freelance for the New York Times. You used to freelance for the Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
You freelance now, sort of regularly for Reuters.
Yeah, Reuters is probably who I freelance for the most.
You have an editor there who calls and assigns stuff, or do you seek them out?
Both. Yeah. Mostly it's them because it's mostly breaking news.
Right.
Calling me up and say, hey, can you go here? You know, like right now.
And you say, well, yes, I can.
Yeah, and they know my my schedule and everything. So usually I'm always able to say yes, which keeps them coming back.
Well, we're going to play a bit of music, and then we're going to talk to Bob more about Chicago Ambassador, where you can read most of his writing. That's where people can find most of your stuff, right? Would you say Chicago Magazine as well?
Yeah, maybe 50%, 60% is Chicago Ambassador. Yeah, I don't know if I'd say most, but a decent amount. For
yeah,
sure.
A decent amount. You can get a sense of Bob Chirito as a writer. Now I want to play you a song, if we can do this, Aubrey Mumpower. How about It's a Most Unusual Day? This is Tom Michael singing, Becky Menzie playing the piano. They're going to be doing a show next Sunday at 4 o'clock at the Great. Have you ever been to the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan, Bob?
No.
That should be your next store. It's a great, great place. Go to acorntheater.com and have a listen.
There are people meeting people. There's sunshine everywhere. There are people greeting people. And a feeling of spring in the air. It's a most unusual day. Feel like throwing my worries away. As an old native-born Californian would say, it's a most unusual day. There's a most unusual sky. Not a sign of a cloud passing by. And if I want to sing, throw my heart in the ring. It's a most unusual day. There are people meeting people. There is sunshine everywhere. There are people greeting people. And a feeling of spring in the air. It's a most unusual time. I keep feeling my temperature climb. If my heart won't behave in the usual way, well, there's only one thing to say. I woke up singing this morning, got out of the right side of bed. I woke up singing this morning and wondering what was ahead. I took one good look at the sun, and was I the luckiest one? My heart won't behave in the usual way. Well, there's only one.
That's Tom Michael and Becky Menzies. They'll be next Sunday at 4 o'clock at the Acorn Theater. Go to Acorn Theater, spelled the conventional way, .com. Bob Chirito's in here, and he'll be here through the news and into the next hour. When did you start the Chicago Ambassador? A lot of people out there dismiss it as a blog. Bob and I do not believe it's a blog, because blogs are run by people who bang their heads against a wall and never get out of their pajamas or something. That's me talking. You don't have to say that. But it's a fabulous thing, and very, very, very Chicago. How and why and when did you start it?
It was in late 2015. And why was just because there were some stories that I was frankly a little tired of pitching and thought that they deserved attention. And, it was really never about the money, although that's nice. But
oh, man, you couldn't be making a penny off this.
No, not off the Chicago Ambassador. No. It's just a passion.
That is the best reason in the world. How do people find it? ChicagoAmbassador.org?
.com. TheChicagoAmbassador.com.
TheChicagoAmbassador.com. Go see it while we get some commercials, then come back for the news. Here are some commercials. Okay, welcome back to the final hour of After Hours in the Tribune Tower. Bob Chirito is my guest. I got to tell you this first. On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, U.S. Service will hold its annual conference in Chicago for the first time in more than 35 years. The whole thing is a way to sort of build bridges about the troubles that we have in our world, how to counter gang, immigration, youth violence, leadership development in the city. It's going to take place at 513 West Fullerton. Go to this website, usservas.org. They've got a lot of amazing speakers coming in, and this can only help the crazy world in which we live, and no one knows that world more intimately than Bob Chirito, who's going to stay here so he can meet my last guest, David Parr, who is, because Bob's a curious guy. The guy goes like, who's David Parr? He goes, he's a magician. Bob's like, okay, I'm in. I want to meet this guy. What's your next? You said earlier, Bob, that, and do you prefer Bob or Robert? You don't care.
Mostly Bob. But
Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, who cares? Bob, Robert.
We're called a lot worse.
Yeah, no kidding. Me too. You said, well, you know, what's your favorite story? And like a true, true writer, you said, well, you know, sometimes I think my favorite story is my next story. Mm-hmm. What are some upcoming stories that people can look for? You haven't written yet, but at the ChicagoAmbassador.com, you can read a lot of Bob's writing. What are some things coming up? Who would you like to interview?
I would like, there's a ton of people. Father Flager. Yeah. He's hard to pin down. As much of a media guy that he is,
yes,
to sit down with him for a while, it's really hard to get him. We've been trying to coordinate something for a while, and it hasn't worked out yet, but it will. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Bartman. Rahm Emanuel.
Everyone wanted Bartman. Huh? Nobody's got him.
You're working on him? You've been working on him?
No, not so much anymore since they won the World Series, but yeah. I'd still like to see
him. He'd be a good
him.
Get, man. Sure. He'd be a very good get. Yeah. Have you interviewed the mayor?
No.
You want to? Would you like to?
Yeah, I'd sit down and talk to him. I think he has a lot to answer for, pro and con.
Well, I think it would be interesting if you could get him to just really honestly open up for an hour.
Yeah.
But he is not.
I don't know if he'd agree to it.
I don't
because
either.
I'm not going to bow down to him. Either,
yeah. No, so. Of course not. Yeah. Of course not. I know you're really interested in music and the arts and literature. What about sports in this town? I heard you on Tony's show.
Yeah.
You know, Sox versus Cubs. And, that's how the show sort of began.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a huge Chicago sports fan, Cub fan, Bears, Hawks. Balls, but as far as writing about sports, I never really got into it, mostly because to me it was always a little boring. You see the same kind of interviews, same kind of quotes. It's hard to go outside of the box unless it's some kind of magazine kind of thing, but the daily news of sports is a little bit boring to me.
See, one of the things, since you got in, you're in your early 40s, and you got into journalism, that a lot of the realms in which you are interested in, they're all so increasingly tightly controlled. Do you know what I mean? Ball players make way much money. I'm not going to say wait too much because people pay them and we go see them.
Correct.
But it's hard to get access to people who it used to be easy to get access to.
Yeah, it's interesting. Although at the same time, I think in the current times, it's easier to get access to people because of social media and that kind of thing. There's less gatekeepers.
Interesting, yeah.
You can kind of go directly to that person instead of some PR person who just is...
Well, there are some of them that have just so many layers.
But that's why I also am not totally attracted to somebody just because they're a celebrity.
Yeah.
If they're not doing something interesting, I don't care about their celebrity.
Really?
You know?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there's some people who... People ask me, why haven't you interviewed... you know, Billy Corgan, or it's like, I have no interest.
Why? Because Billy Corgan's been interviewed too much.
Yeah, and
you know, you did one of your interviews. You interviewed Rick Tellender, mm-hmm. the wonderful, wonderful sports writer and the author of a couple books, and an old friend of mine about his latest artistic, creative venture. He's painting now, right?
Yeah,
thanks to our mutual friend Tony Fitzpatrick,
largely because of. And that's what attracted me to that story, was that nobody knew, including myself, that he was an artist.
Yeah.
He's been drawing pretty much all his life, but he finally, the last few years, really buckled down and got serious, and then he was confident enough to bring it out to the public.
Yeah, his show opened like a week and a half ago, right? Almost just a week ago at the Adventureland Gallery, the Fitzpatrick, part of the... ever-expanding Fitzpatrick empire. What do you think, Bob? I know this is a loaded question. If you don't want to answer it, you don't have to. But what do you think of the way in which the Tribune and Sun-Times and now the newly purchased Chicago Reader covers the scene here? I, for one, do not think they do enough sort of arts and entertainment feature writing.
I agree with that. I think there's not enough of everything right now. I think the staffs are so cut so short, you know, so small nowadays. It's hard to cover everything adequately.
Yeah.
You know, you see even crime and daily breaking news. It's a lot of stuff gets missed.
We talked about Chicago Ambassador, which I think of as an online magazine. Some people have referred to it derisively as a blog. You can't make any money doing that. This is truly for you a labor of love, is it not?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, if I really wanted to focus on some online ads, I suppose I can pull in something from it, but that's not... I don't have the time. I'm doing too much reporting for everybody.
You're listening, ladies and gentlemen, to a true, true writer. The frustrations of the freelance life, Bob Chirito and I could talk about forever. You've also interviewed, we've interviewed a number, Kevin Koval, Art Shea. What do you think of Art? Art Shea is a late, great photographer.
Yeah, he just passed away. He was great. He was a really nice guy. What a life. I interviewed him at his place.
Yeah,
and
quite a place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was doing, at the time, I forgot, some show. He always had some show.
Art was 96. I can't remember. I wrote his obituary.
Yeah,
I mean,
his life was amazing.
Oh.
The people we covered and
everybody
photographed.
His camera caught all the big personalities of the last half of the 20th century, including his dear friend and running buddy, Nelson Algren.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask Bob Chirito to stay here while I bring in after a short commercial break, David Parr. So, and you can even get in on the interview, Bob, if you want to, because I think David would make a great guest for you.
Sounds fun.
In your Chicago Ambassador or someplace else. And this way we can all, you know what I'll have him do? At the end, very end of the show, I will make him have us all disappear so we can just leave the tower. Aubrey, what do you think about that? Ben? Yeah, I'm going to have him make it all disappear. I think that'll be perfect. We're going to take a little commercial break, and then we'll bring in David Parr to talk about his latest magic adventure. I will tell you that 100 events, 19 days, One epic food festival. Visit ctfoodbowl.com for the ultimate Chicago food experience this August. We'll be right back.
If I never met you, if I never saw your face, this world would be a colder place, I bet. If we never met.
That again is the voice of Tom Michael on the piano of Becky Menzie. They are going to be performing what they're calling a Jim of a Show, featuring the music of Jimmy Webb, Jimmy Van Heusen, and James Jim Taylor. Next Sunday, 4 o'clock at the amazing, beautiful Acorn Theater, which I really do believe is among the handsomest theaters, not just in the Midwest, in this country. It's in Three Oaks, Michigan, just around the lake. So go see that. You can go to acorntheater.com for all the information. These two are among the grand talents in this talent-filled town. Also grand talent is my next guest, David Parr, the last guest of the tower. Does that intimidate you, David?
No.
You should be thrilled.
It's thrilling because I always wanted to do an interview in this fishbowl studio.
Well, David is, as I said, I don't make empty promises here. He's going to make us all disappear a little before 11. Bob Chirito is sitting in, too, because I just thought these two guys would be, it would be good for you two guys to meet.
Yeah.
Well, meet David.
This will be fun. Hi, David.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet
you.
Bob, what do you know about magic? Anything much or anything? Or
No, not. I mean,
you're not
just
a magician.
What I've seen on TV, David Blaine, and going back to Houdini, but I've never studied magic.
Do you watch Penn and Teller Fool Us?
I haven't watched them in years.
So. Okay. Because I was on their TV show.
Okay.
When?
Last season. And I won. I fooled them.
What was your.
I did a piece of card magic, and I had estimated my chances of fooling them at about 30%. And so I flew out there and I did it. And
did they come to you and say,
"Yeah, they saw a video of this particular piece of magic, and they said we want you to do this on the show."
Wow! And so they flew you out.
So that was the producers. It's kept secret from Penn and Teller, who's been booked on the show. So it's a total surprise to them when you step out onto the stage.
How did you find them? They're interesting guys, no question about it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And Teller's a walking encyclopedia of magic. So I thought that's why I estimated my chances of fooling them at only about 30%. So I did the piece, and they conferred for about 10 minutes. You only see about a minute of it on the show. And then they said, "We don't know Jack. They didn't even have a theory."
Wow.
Which I had never seen happen before.
Congratulations. That's a great accomplishment.
So now my trophy is on display at the Chicago Magic Lounge, along with the props I used to win the trophy.
Your new show is called Cabinet of Curiosities. It's every Wednesday at the Chicago Magic Lounge. We're going to talk about the show and the lounge. But this is, when I first met you, I don't know when I first met you, it had to be a long time.
It was a while back, yeah.
You were doing your show, The Magic Cabaret,
at
the Victory Gardens Theater. The Magic Cabaret, Bob, trio from one of the, it was Wednesday nights, but it also had run for 8 years.
Wow.
That shows the popularity of it.
Yeah, it ran for 10 total.
10.
Yeah.
I caught it after 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, let me just say, I love that we're on the radio and you're wearing all black, 90 degrees out. You have a black leather jacket, black shirt, black slacks, and
you got to live it.
You got to live it.
You're a magician 24/7. I discovered this about it. People who are non-magicians don't view magic as something you do. They view it as who you are.
Huh, interesting.
And so they expect you to be magic 24/7.
Wow.
So I'm always prepared to perform magic because the first question after somebody finds out that you're a magician is going to be, can you show some magic?
Yeah. Do something. Can you at all describe, without giving anything away, David Parr, the trick you did, not trick, the magic you did for Penn and Teller?
On Fool Us?
Go ahead.
It involved two decks of cards and the host of the show, Allison Hannigan, and we each shuffled our decks of cards. They had different colored backs,
yeah.
And we shuffled our decks of cards, and we cut them, so they were all mixed up, and we each chose a card, and we exchanged decks, and at the end of it all, when we found the card that we had chosen in each of our decks, they turned out to match against all the odds.
Wow.
And you can see the clip of it on my website. It's davidparr.com. The clip from Fool Us is right there on the front page.
I'll be doing that after you make us disappear. If I find that I've landed somewhere with a computer, I'll do that. That's a huge coup for you, is it not, David? Or am I making too much of it?
Oh, yeah. No, I that was that elevates an amazing experience.
Wouldn't you think, Bob? I mean, if you could... Yeah, invent a trick that those guys couldn't figure out because they've seen it all, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. And lots of my friends have been on that show, and so I was really looking forward to it. The hardest part was after I won, I couldn't tell anyone. I was under a non-disclosure agreement because we recorded the show in March, and it aired in August.
It's like The Bachelor or something.
So it was months where I couldn't tell anybody, and that was
like winning.
Agonizing.
But you know what that's like? It's like winning Jeopardy and not being able to tell.
I know
somebody.
it was funny. It was killing me.
You know, Tony Fitzpatrick is buddies with Penn Jillette. So.
Right, very,
that's another
very close
Tony
friends.
Connection here.
And Penn's a big collector of Tony's work, too, which is not a bad thing to have. We're going to get some commercials, then we're going to get some news, and David Parr is going to tell us all about... When did you start this show, David, the Cabin of Curiosities?
Well, the Magic Lounge opened in February, right at the end of February.
Okay, so it's relatively recent.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So the show's new.
And why the... You're not still doing the show at Victory Garden.
No, we wrapped up after 10 years.
A decade. That's a long time to do
it. It seemed like a good
juncture. It was fun,
juncture.
Though, man. Last night I went to see it, there was a couple from Germany, a couple from the Beverly neighborhood, a couple people from Old Town. It was really a cool, cool thing. I will tell you that Dean Richards will join the Steve Cochran Show all morning on Monday to kick off the first show in the new studio. So tune in from 6 to 10. Here are some commercials, then we'll get some news, and then Bob Chirito, David Parr, and I will close off the last after hours at the Tribune Tower, and David Parr will make us all disappear. Welcome back. The last minutes of after hours in the tower, and I'm really happy to be spending them with David Parr, an old friend, a magician, one of the leading magicians, not just in the Midwest, but I think around the country. You can find him at davidparr.com. Bob Chirito, a new friend. This is the perfect thing. He's a freelance writer whose work you can see. You know, he writes for Reuters. He writes for the New York Times. He also runs a online magazine called the ChicagoAmbassador.com, where you can read a lot of his writing. Fellas, let's close this off in fine fashion. David, you moved your show, your long-running magic show, from Victory Gardens Theater after a 10-year run.
Well, we closed it. We wrapped it up after a decade.
Were you tired, or had you just done what you could do with that show?
It felt like we had brought it as far, it had evolved as much as it was going to.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I knew that the folks from the Chicago Magic Lounge were building their own space, a multi-million-dollar theater completely devoted to magic.
How did that happen? I know there have been, you know, modest. There hasn't been much in the papers, not enough for my taste about it. How did this all come to be?
I guess, well, basically they were renting space from in Uptown, and performing in a theater there, and they did so well just one night a week in that space, they expanded it and kept expanding it, and finally it reached a point where it was like, I think we can build our own space.
They spent a lot of money.
So they found investors, and they built it. And so they came to me and said, hey, we're going to have a stage This thing's going to open next year. We'll have a stage. Pick a night of the week, and it's yours.
Wow.
And I said, well, I've had a title and a concept for a show in my back pocket for years.
Had you?
Yeah. And it's this show. And I just said, I just haven't had a place to try it.
So how different is the new show?
It's very different. In the Magic Cabaret, I had a partner, Joe Diamond, in the show. And in this, it's just me solo. And it's basically a collection of all the weird artifacts and strange stories I've been collecting over probably about 20, 25 years. And it's all pushed into this one show. So I have a cabinet on the stage, and there's weird artifacts in it.
Something like 30 yeah. or so different artifacts.
Yeah, and so I take them off the shelf, and I explain what they are, and there's usually a weird story or a spooky story that goes with them, and something magical happens, and then I put it back on the shelf. And there are points in the show when people from the audience can choose an artifact.
You know,
from
one of the things about your previous show is it was very energetically audience participatory.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a hallmark of the Chicago style of magic, which, you know, that style, what we've come to call close-up magic, where there's no fourth wall between the artist and the audience, that was born here in Chicago, and it spread throughout the world. And so that style where it's a collective experience and not just passive observers watching a show is very much the Chicago style.
So you talk about the Chicago style. Are there any magicians the general public would know that came out of that?
Oh, I think it's influenced all magicians. I mean, you name a magician, and that person has been influenced by the Chicago style of magic.
See, I think one of the problems, and Bob brings up this point, is most of the magicians, except for Penn and Teller, who would be commonly known to people, are from that, you know, the big show. David Copperfield's going to make the Empire State Building go away, or David Blaine's going to get shot in the head or something. You know, it's that kind of TV showbiz magicians. And I'm not diminishing what they're able to do.
No, because that stuff ain't easy to do.
Oh, I can't.
It takes a lot of planning.
Yes, here, I have five elephants. It'd be like, well, maybe someone should get here real soon and tape us disappearing from this
A
studio.
Lot of R&D
I don't
goes
diminish.
Into it. Yeah.
Oh, there's no question about it. And even, you know, it's magicians in Vegas who do those big, flashy kinds of shows. But I have been one to always prefer. A lot of magic I saw at Mr. C's Magic Lounge in Berwyn many, many
the
years ago.
The close-up magic, yeah.
Run by Hugh Cosgrove. And I am fascinated with that because the experience is so intimate.
Exactly. And it feels like the magic is happening to you personally.
Yes.
And that makes it a very different experience from seeing an amazing thing happen 50 feet away. And so, I mean, that style influenced even people. When I was growing up, Doug Henning was the most famous magician in the world.
Yeah.
And
he would do, like, make an elephant disappear.
Right. He did these massive stage shows and television specials. But even in his live show, he would take moments to perform close-up magic.
Wow.
Where they'd bring in a video camera and there'd be a big screen and you could watch close-ups of his hands as he performed this close-up stuff.
And we talked about the sleight of hand a little bit off the air, and I asked, do you have a problem going to any kind of
casino? Like, can you go to a casino
without being
immediately arrested? Is your picture on the wall there?
Yeah, no. As I explained, the techniques of cheating for gambling have some overlap with sleight of hand. But the trouble is, if you do anything impressive when you're cheating, you'll get caught.
You'll get your hands cut off.
Right, yeah. And your arms will get broken.
Yeah.
So, like Fast Eddie.
Fast Eddie
right,
Felsen,
in the Hustler. Yeah. Although there is some overlap, and there were some famous magicians who sought out underground cheaters, card sharps, to learn their techniques. But a lot of that stuff you could not apply to cheating at cards,
fascinating.
Because it's too It's too clearly sleight of hand. It's too impressive.
The other thing, we got to take a break in a couple of minutes, but the other thing that impresses me about what you're talking about, seeing your previous show at Victory Gardens, was there is a real, even in this, you know, hyper-technological age, there still is such, I think, even a greater taste for the kind of wonder. Not in, ooh, look what I have on my phone, but look what magic is.
Yes, I think so. I think we need the direct experience of mystery. It's an important thing to human beings. Mm. And magic is the art form that gives us that experience, that feeling of awe or wonder and not knowing, right?
Yeah. That's very, very important. We're going to take a short commercial break, then we're going to close off this edition, and we're going to disappear. The curse of the Billy Goat is finally over, and we've got Northside champions, but the Billy Goat lives on in the friendly taverns at Dot Chicago, and in a new place, too, at participating Jewel Osco stores, Mariano's, and Pete's Fresh Market in the Chicagoland area. You'll find the world-famous Billy Goat burgers frozen and ready to go home with you. That would make you the chef, so you start up the grill, but don't forget to add cheese, pickles, and onions to create your very own world champion cheeseburger. Cheeseburger. We'll be right back. The way to explore the Chicago Magic Lounge is to go there on Wednesday night to see my friend and Bob Chirito's new friend David Parr do his show, Cabinet of Curiosities, during which he will explain and grab on to 30 different weird things in a cabinet, and they lead to tricks, and they lead to stories, because you are, nothing else, a real historian about magic, and your passion for magic is intense. And this place, the Chicago Magic Lounge, I mean, your particular show takes place in a theater in the place, or...
Yes, yeah. There are actually three different performance spaces
wow.
in there. The bar up front, which is open every day at 5, and the bartenders do magic, which is the style that
yeah,
you
the
you
Mr.
So love.
C's. Oh my God,
yeah.
Shulians and yeah. Mr. C's. Yeah.
So you can see Chicago style bar magic there. If you have a ticket to the show, you go through a second secret door into the main stage space, the Blackstone Cabaret.
How big is that?
That seats about 120.
Wow.
And cabaret-style seating, tiered yeah. seating with tables and so on. There's a menu. You can get a drink. You can get a bite to eat.
During the shows.
Sure.
So
yeah.
it's very much like yeah. the Up Comedy Club at Second City.
Yep. And there's close-up magic table side for the first hour.
Wow.
And then my show goes on at 8:30, and I'm there till 9:30, and then you can go back out to the bar and watch some more magic.
It's amazing that
go ahead, Bob.
You know, that they have magic every night of the week, that there's such a demand.
I think people are hungry for that experience, of mystery. I think... You know, and we said this to when we first pitched the idea of the Magic Cabaret
yeah.
to the theater company. We're like, people, there is an audience for this. They just have to know where to go to find it. And, I mean, and the proof is all around us. I mean,
you've got a show run, albeit Wednesday nights, but your show ran for 10 years.
Yeah, and we deliberately picked an off night.
Yeah.
We said, you know, give us a night when normally there's not a show. Like,
yeah.
when's the theater dark? And they were like, okay. And we said, okay, we'll give you an audience on that night.
Who have you been drawing to your new show, David Parr, Cabinet of Curiosities?
We get a lot of tourists coming through the lounge.
They'll come all the way up to 50.
Oh, absolutely. I think on TripAdvisor, it's now the number one nightlife activity.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
I know you're not surprised by it, but is there a little part of David Parr that is really is a little surprised by this? It is on the far north side of the city. It's not Russian cedar.
Yeah, no. What surprised me the most was how quickly this all happened. They
yeah.
broke ground on this on June 7th of last year.
Wow.
And when they said, we're going to we're aiming for a February opening. I thought,
said, who opens anything in February?
Right. Yeah. And in that time span just seemed like, okay, that's magical thinking. Right. I mean, all the bureaucratic nonsense you have to go through and all that, the licensure, the inspections, all that stuff. Really? You're going to. And sure enough, we opened in February.
There was no sleight of hand in that process?
Well, who knows?
Yeah, no political
what
sleight of hand. No
machinations happen. You don't want to know.
You're happy with your show, and it obviously changes from Wednesday to Wednesday depending on what people
choose
you to do. Tell us, tell me and Bob and the audience out there, tell us a couple of the things that people might choose.
Well, I have something here with me.
Well, of course you do. David, for those of you who are regular listeners to the show, know that he did a card trick and a coin trick on the radio. And if magic, and he makes magic work on the radio, which you would think is impossible. Well, he is holding in his hand a little black bag.
Yes, this is this little black bag. Hold out your hand. Inside that bag is one of the key pieces of evidence from the Salem witch trials. Do you have a guess as to what it might be?
Some red hair?
No.
That's a pretty good guess.
That is an interesting guess.
A gold tooth?
No. I'm going to show you what it is.
He's opening the bag.
Inside here is a little doll made from corn husk. Now, this was found in one of the suspected witches' houses, and they called it a poppet, which is an old-timey word for a simple handmade doll. Now, there are two legitimate reasons why this might have been in someone's home.
Okay.
First, these kinds of dolls were common children's toys. You know, simple to make.
Sure.
Doesn't matter if it gets ruined. You can
make another one.
Yep. Second, there was a sort of luck ritual that came from the British Isles, and that was that you kept a part of the harvest, in this case, corn husk. You made a little doll of it, and then you kept it in your house until the following year harvest to ensure a good harvest the next year. Right. So it could have been a little luck charm. But no, the magistrates didn't go for either of those explanations. They insisted it was used for witchcraft and specifically for placing a curse on someone. Now, here's how that works. You imagine someone you don't like, for instance, my ninth grade algebra teacher, and then you point your finger at it like this. So, Rick, just point down at the doll, and then make a counterclockwise circle over the doll, counterclockwise like that, and you'll see eventually it'll start to take effect.
God, it's rising.
Tell them what's happening here.
The doll is rising onto its feet. Bob Jarito is looking
at his hand is not moving.
And nothing
now,
is moving
here. If you
want
to reverse the curse, you can reverse the circle.
I'm reversing like the curse, and the little doll is going back down. That's fantastic. You are the greatest magician in the world. Didn't you think that was cool,
Bob?
That's
cool.
That's great, David. That's great. Wow. So during the course of a show, for the hour-long show, you will. How many of the curiosities will you probably want on average?
Probably about 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And and like I said, I'm always swapping in new stuff.
Sure,
to try it out. I just put a new item in the cabinet last week, and so. Yeah, there'll be some surprises. So,
you are really something. I know. You know, one of the things that really distinguishes you, and the thing too, Bob Jarito, about you too. I mean, you guys are both so passionate about what you do, and I know you have, and you both have to practice what you do because you're not going to get. You can only get better at it.
Well, it's been part of my life since I was seven years old.
7 years old.
So,
I remember that.
I can't imagine my life without it.
Do you feel yourself, I know you do, Bob, growing as a writer, but do you feel yourself growing as a magician?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's always room to learn and grow. And that's, you know, an art has to stay organic and alive, or it just, or it dies.
I think that's what keeps people hungry. If there's no room for improvement, then you can just quit.
Right. No, it'll just ossify and die.
Yeah.
So, it has to stay alive.
I could not be more excited by this show. Again, you can go to ChicagoMagicLounge.com.
I do wonder one thing, David. You started off by saying how magic's a 24/7 passion or job. Is there a time when you just want to disappear, though, from it?
That's going to happen in 3 minutes.
Not really.
When he's going to make us disappear from the studio.
Because I've it's been part of my life since I was seven, so I'm always thinking about it. You know, I joke with some of my friends who are not magicians because they say, "What you're going to turn this into a magic trick, right?" Because that's how I think.
Yeah.
Now.
Wow. It is great. We got to take a little commercial break. Then you will get the news, and then David will make us all disappear in about 3 minutes.
Cool.
Well, thanks so much for listening to the final After Hours broadcast from the Tribune Tower. Because you will never see him again, I want to thank Aubrey Mumpower, the great engineer, Ben Anderson, who hasn't been a producer long here, and he will be vanishing into the thin air. Bob Chirito, one of Chicago's most prolific and talented freelance writers. David Parr, one of the great magicians on the planet. Me, Rick Kogan. You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For details, you just listen to Steve Cochran at 720 on 720 WGN. If you're a smart speaker user, just say play WGN radio and tune in. The news, which is coming up in 1 second with Roger Badish, is brought to you by RoadAmerica.com. David Parr, make us all disappear.
Concentrate, and abracadabra.